look, we've got a problem here with the water in Havelock North.
My husband was quite sick with it.
Systemic local government failure to provide...
This was an horrific disaster.
We've got to make sure that people can be confident in the quality of the water supply.
Struck down with vomiting and diarrhoea, and it's been linked to 3 deaths.
Water infrastructure is, ironically, a dry topic we often think little about until things go wrong. Havelock North's 2016 Campylobacter outbreak was a classic case of crisis prompting a response. But the government's solution, an ambitious plan of reform, has proved unpopular with councils. With local and general elections looming, it's shaping up as a major point of contention. Kia ora, ko Russell Palmer aho, ane te pūrongo tō rangapū mō tēnei wiki. Welcome to Focus on Politics. Water. It's a basic requirement for life and a human right. We use it all the time. When we take a drink, we use the wharepaku, and, with climate change, we're increasingly having to deal with the effects of huge, damaging storms. Thousands made sick, and 3 fatalities in Havelock North prompted the then national government to review drinking water guidelines. The findings weren't pretty, but it was just a tipping point, as industry group Water NZ explains.
18% of New Zealanders receive drinking water that does not meet the drinking water standards. 64% have water that meets the drinking water standards. That's a lot of people that are receiving non-compliant drinking water or water that we don't know what it is. In terms of the wastewater, we've got across the country about a quarter of the wastewater treatment plants operating on expired consents. There's another roughly about a quarter where we know that they are fully compliant. Just in terms of stormwater, we know that there's no national standards across the country. We know that there is a lack of consistency. We know that there is a lack of compliance there as well. We know that there is a significant need for investment in infrastructure.
It's not just the water, it's also about the cost.
The average household in New Zealand today is paying something like $1,100 for 3 water services. Now that might be in rates, it might be directly metered, but on the average, you're paying about $1,100. In Scotland, we are paying $750. So you're paying about 40% more than we are. Despite that, you don't get what we get. So in 2020, there were over 3,600 pollution incidents in the 48 councils plus Auckland. That 3,600 plus compares with 230 in Scotland. So on a per million of population basis, New Zealand is having 20 times more of these than we are.
That was Alan Sutherland, head of the Water Industry Commission for Scotland, which prepared for the government the biggest ever assessment of New Zealand's water infrastructure. Their work was the foundation for Labour's plan, announced by Minister Nanaia Mahuta last June, to combine water management from 67 councils into 4 large, purpose-built water service entities. Strategic oversight and local voice would be provided by groups of council and iwi representatives, billed as the biggest shake-up to the sector since 1989. It was, in part, a financial solution.
So the issue really came down to not just the number of regions, but what level of aggregation would enable standalone entities to get the credit rating to be able to get finance into infrastructure.
But it also aimed to account for Māori aspirations of kaitiakitanga, or guardianship.
Many councils raised the issue with me that they have really good relationships with iwi and mana whenua, and so they wanted to make sure that in some shape or form we were able to carry those relationships forward. The other thing is that several treaty settlements that have been reached also have obligations that are carried through in terms of their relationship with their waterways. And so it was important to ensure that Te Mana o Te Waia aspirations could be achieved through this reform program as well.
Does the government assert that Māori have rights and interests in water?
No, these reforms do not address issues of ownership, rights or interests. And in fact, this first bit of legislation that's going through the House has a preservation clause to make that quite clear.
But the massive reform program was never going to be smooth sailing. Council's investment in 3 water systems, drinking, waste and stormwater, had historically been patchy and inconsistent, and mashing it all together could smack of unfairness. Water is also one of the biggest responsibilities for local authorities, and the government soon realised its plan would need all their assets to work effectively. It would need to use force. Its delayed announcement of that, giving the impression of a fait accompli. Tensions between central and local governments soon neared a boiling point the opposition was quick to capitalise on.
Communities against the reforms were right to call them out as untransparent and unaccountable.
Water service entities cannot be held accountable by either ratepayers or the government.
This government grabs everything it can, and what they can't grab, they tie up in red tape.
I speak to those local communities and those local councils. I hear a genuine concern for the fact that these mega entities will drown out their voices of their ratepayers.
Councils raised concerns over representation, ownership, and the risk of privatisation. They wanted a bigger say than the government's economic goals were likely to allow. To get them on board, Ms. Mahuta brought together 9 mayors and 9 iwi representatives to find their own solutions, in the end accepting nearly all the group's 47 recommendations. The government would set up an emergency fund in case things went wrong, and a representative's subgroup would appoint the board rather than an independent panel. Councils would also have non-financial shares in the big new entities. Here's group member, Western Bay of Plenty Mayor, Gary Webber.
One share for every approximately 50,000 people. And what the fundamental thing is then, further in the recommendations, is the ability to oppose any shareholding sale. And that would mean that, or the recommendation is that up to 100% of the councillors, or if they went out to a poll, of the population would have to approve the sale of that share, but that would also have to have the unanimous approval of all of the other councils in the entity.
The first bill is set to pass before the end of the year. The entity is to begin operations in July 2024. But there's an election before then, and National and ACT have both promised full repeal. National's MP Simon Watts has a litany of concerns.
The ownership of the water assets is going to be moved away from local control. There's an impact there around property rights. We also believe that the entity model isn't going to be set up appropriately to deal with the sustainable financing and revenue elements that are going to be necessary for the scale of infrastructure required. We've got significant issues in regards to the benefit case the whole reform process has been built on off the back of the Scottish reforms, and we don't believe that that is substantiated and stacks. Lastly, and most importantly, the impact on our local government entities in terms of basically ripping the heart out of those entities, particularly in areas of small parts of the country, the impact on our local government is going to be significant.
With the flood of opposition, ACT leader David Seymour says the government should at least press pause.
They don't have political consensus. They don't have the details ready. It seems that they are rushing them through for fear of losing the election rather than making good policy. And I don't think that is good for them in the long term. It's not good for their political brand, and it's not good for New Zealand.
His political polar opposite, the Green Party, has an agreement to work with Labour on some issues and supports the overall thrust of the reforms. But its spokesperson, former Conservation Minister Eugenie Sage, also wants the government to slow down and get things right.
This exercise needs to succeed. It's too big to fail. We need to have cross-party agreement so that we don't have flip-flop lawmaking and any future government rolling back or changing major elements.
The co-governance model is also a stumbling block, one particularly denounced by the ACT Party's Simon Court.
Water is a spiritual concept that is more important than the people and the communities that it serves. I know, it's amazing. 2022, hundreds of years since the scientific enlightenment enabled us to grasp concepts such as the earth goes around the sun, not the other way around. And yet, this is the spiritual nonsense which is being forced on New Zealanders.
But the government says that's misinformation.
When Māori talk about water, it's the whole complete cycle of water. And perhaps that's the challenge that we have when we think about our broad objectives of protecting source water to be able to drink so that everyone can drink good water. When we're thinking about returning water into its receiving environment and the health of how we treat water to be able to go back into the receiving environment to do no more harm. Actually, a te mana o te wai whole of cycle perspective around the treatment of water would do us great good.
Claims of misinformation have been a consistent criticism deployed by the government against opponents of the reforms. The minister previously acknowledged the government's initial approach to councils and its advertising could have been better, but this week, Nanaia Mahuta laid the blame on misinformation and conspiracy theorists.
We saw, in terms of the protest at Parliament that led to an occupation of Parliament, consolidated a whole lot of issues, and Three Waters was one of them that wasn't helpfully cast in a way that got us to the right outcome in terms of the conversation we want to have.
She says she continues to believe New Zealanders are fair-minded and want a sustainable way of funding Three Waters services. But those peddling misinformation have
totally perverted the intent of the reform.
She says protesters rallied outside the recent local government NZ conference, prompting an increase in security. Te Pāti Māori co-leaders Debi Ngāre Wapaka and Rāwiri Waititi say they too face threats from online radicals bad enough to take extra measures.
And we wanted a joint task force put together to actually focus on white supremacy in this country, because that's what's been ignored.
In line with what Minister Mahuta has said before, they say the reforms do not resolve core issues of water ownership under the treaty.
From a quality perspective on what's been proposed, we have been supportive of the efforts that the government's making. But again, for us, it's always about the rights and interests of why it still hasn't been resolved.
Until Māori rights and interests have been recognised in terms of water ownership, that would be the ultimate stand of the Pāti Māori all the time.
At a local level, councils, including the 31 members of the Three Waters opposition group, Communities for Local Democracy, largely support greater Māori influence and voice in the decision-making process. But mayors and councillors facing re-election contests next month also say, despite the working group's changes, it's not all water under the bridge. A recent survey of all 291 mayoral candidates showed a clear majority, over 75%, against the reforms. Timaru was quick to join the C4LD group, and the Mayor Nigel Bowen says their main concern is the economic enablement control of water brings to the district.
We've got a urban supply feeding Timaru Central, and 50% of that actually fuels our commercial and industrial, so the risk for us not having that accountability back through local democracy is a real concern.
He is one of those saying there should be bipartisan support for such a large change. Selwyn Mayor Sam Broughton says their council made improvements in the past decade and does not want residents paying twice, once for themselves, once for their neighbours.
Elections always play on your mind when you're an elected member, so that's very present. All councils across the country at the moment, but I think people in Selwyn are sensible, can understand the seriousness of water quality and wanting great drinking water, not only here but across the country. And I think we've made good decisions locally around providing that for our district and not wanting to commit our residents to paying for everyone else's.
Auckland's Mayor Phil Goff says the balance of control still isn't right.
We don't get the advantages of the reform, but we do get the disadvantages. We will lose control of 28% of the assets that Aucklanders own and govern through their elected representatives on council. We have nominal ownership of it still under the government's proposed changes, but after contributing 90% of the population to the water services entity A, and 93% of the asset value, will have 28% of control over the governing body.
He says the council would prefer the government to provide a direct guarantee to council's water debts, allowing them to borrow more. Porirua's Mayor Anita Baker supports the reforms, but
we're missing the local voice in the reforms, which is one thing we're not keen on.
And staffing is also a concern.
Even if we funded it a different way, we don't have enough water technicians, we're not training enough water engineers. So at the moment we can't all get the amount of infrastructure done just with our Wellington Water Group as it is.
The Minister hopes to keep councils on side.
I'd always hoped right at the beginning that I'd be working in partnership with councils and that we would work together on how to inform the public about the challenge we're facing. This has been a four-year project and I still, sadly, am of the view that a number of ratepayers do not really know what they're paying for their poor water service delivery, but also how their councils can fix it.
She's backed by her second-in-command, the Associate Local Government Minister and MP for Wairarapa, Kieran McInulty. Appointed in June, he puts a rural Pākehā face on the relationship with councils facing the weight of several large reform programs. He has been visiting councils around the country ever since, now more than 40, to engage and get their input.
Mr. Speaker, if the member spent time, as I have, travelling around and visiting councils, 22 councils so far in the last 3 weeks, every single one of them has said that the status quo is unsustainable.
RNZ has repeatedly sought an interview on the subject over the past 3 weeks, but Mr. McAnulty has refused until the tour is complete. Several councils urging the government to slow the flow say reform is needed, but there must be another way. And many details still need resolving. Widespread calls to exclude stormwater, at least to start with, a working group has been assigned to look at that, and no detail yet about economic regulation and pricing, a driving cause of the reforms. But industry group Water NZ's bosses say there's no right time for intergenerational change. They referred the Select Committee to a paper by the Commissioner for the Environment, which 22 years ago said the current model had reached the end of its life and incremental tinkering would only make the necessary changes harder and more costly. But whether the government's unpopular plan will achieve those aims is yet to be answered. That's Focus on Politics. Thanks for joining us. Mā te wā.